Hey everyone, welcome back to the podcast. Jenna Layden here. I'm your founder and host. And oh my goodness, it's so good to be back with you. What a journey the last few months have been. I just got back from India again. I was guided to go for Guru Purnima, which is the Guru full moon, the full moon at the beginning of July. And every year when this happens, this is a particularly potent full moon and energetically supports our ability to connect with masterful souls, divine souls on the other side in the spiritual realm and receive their support in more powerful ways. So I was guided back to the ashram in India. If you've been following along, you know about that. If you don't, check out some of the recent episodes. And what we're going to be talking about today is a book that I read on the way to India. And you'll also know if you've been following along, this podcast is partially, you know, my process of just sharing my journey and my awakening process and this journey to India, this journey to the Shiva Sai Mandir Ashram, which was built by Saint Sri Kaleshwar in his lifetime, is very much a culminating point in my spiritual journey because I was guided to this saint, this ashram, his particular teachings and spiritual practices because he brought forth in his lifetime the spiritual technologies that were used by Jesus and the Holy Family and Jesus's disciples. And interestingly enough, I was looking through my book collection before this trip to India and thinking, okay, you know, I've spent just tons of hours studying, you know, Sri Kaleshwar's teachings recently, reading all of his books. You know, I need a different book to read. I just need to shift gears a little bit. And I was looking through my book collection and found a book I had bought years ago. At the beginning of my spiritual journey, I had started reading it. I got like a chapter into it and then put it on my bookshelf, moved on to the next book. Half of the time, I've got like 8 books going at once, and maybe half of them get finished all the way. And then the other half, you know, I revisit at some point. So I find this book, and it is called Jesus and the Essenes. It's written by Dolores Cannon. If you are a fan of Dolores Cannon, you might already be familiar with this book. If you are new to Dolores Cannon's work, this is going to be an overview of that book. There will be spoilers. So if you don't want spoilers, turn this off. If you want the overview and you want the cliff notes, hang in there. This will be a fun chat. So I've gone deep in my research of past life regressions, past life, you know, recall and cases and case studies that exist, one, to validate some of the experiences I've had, and two, to help round out my understanding of history and to fill in missing pieces of our history and maybe missing pieces of our knowledge and wisdom related to the mysteries of the universe. So I've read all of Dolores's work except for this one. I had not finished this one. So I find it before the India trip and I think, okay, yeah, this is perfect because what I'm doing with these journeys to India and my recent kind of evolution of my spiritual practice is engaging these spiritual technologies and these mantra practices that Jesus used to gain his supernatural abilities, that Sri Kaleshwar used to demonstrate that these supernatural abilities can be activated in a human. And so all of a sudden I'm like, okay, yeah, it's time to read this book. Clearly there was a reason that, you know, I'd put it off this long and that I'm now revisiting it. And I should, you know, also note that as part of my work researching and integrating, you know, Sri Kaleshwar's teachings, it has become very apparent to me, you know, just through reading his words, but also at a, you know, deep cellular level, like this knowing that he absolutely lived with Jesus and he was present during Jesus's lifetime. I'm getting chills now, of course. And so there's something really important in this book that would validate some of what I'm learning about Sri Kaleshwar's life and his memories. So we're going to get into that in just a moment. And you know, I took this book to India with me, and a number of synchronicities played out, including a talk that happened at the ashram related to Jesus's ministry and related to some of the quote unquote charges against him at that time that resulted in his death. And this talk, which was about some of the information Sri Kaleshwar had discussed in his lifetime, but had not fully disclosed in written material, this information about what Jesus was charged with is corroborated in this book. So at the ashram, you know, I had this opportunity to hear directly from senior students who had heard directly from Sri Kaleshwar some of his memories and his knowledge of some missing pieces of history. So more on that at some point. We'll talk, you know, about all of that. And we're going to be interviewing people on the other podcast, Supernatural Souls. So check that out. We'll get into some of these topics in depth related to Sri Kaleshwar. But today we're going to talk about Dolores Cannon and her book, Jesus and the Essenes. And she delves into this topic of Jesus's connection with the Essenes, who were a mystical and spiritual group that lived during his time. Many people are familiar with this group now, that they carried forth some of the Gnostic teachings that have largely been left out of the Bible, and or left out of modern, you know, Christianity, modern Christian teachings. And so Dolores Cannon, in her work, you know, focuses on past life regression. When she was alive on Earth, that was her focus, her career. She regressed people professionally, and she became kind of a historian of missing pieces of history through this process of regressing people. And in this book, she explores the life of Jesus through the memories and experiences of one particular individual who was able to retrieve memories of living during that era. But you know, what's fascinating about her past life regression cases is that the subjects or the individuals who are under hypnosis, most of them have no real interest in the material coming forth, or they're in some cases, you know, after the fact, really shy about exploring that information. And sometimes they're astounded by the information that comes forth under hypnosis. And, you know, similar to the work of Sarah Breskman Cosme, who's now a current QHHT practitioner and who has gotten pretty well known by doing that work, Dolores doesn't lead her clients. And she, similar to Sarah, does a really awesome job of asking detailed questions that just retrieve the right data and in some cases, information about the more mundane aspects of life during these important time periods. And Dolores also works with people who rarely have engaged in studying the time periods, the spirituality, or the history of the information that comes forth in her books. So while there are, I think, varying opinions about the accuracy of some past life regression information that comes from people, we can see throughout a lot of Dolores's work that this information is coming from somewhere else. It's not coming from, you know, the conscious mind of these people. It's not coming from, you know, their kind of current knowledge and information from this lifetime. So this book, Jesus and the Essenes, covers the life primarily of one individual, a young man named Shudi, who, I think I'm saying that name right, that's how we're going to say it, who lived in the Qumran community of the Essenes. And as Dolores starts questioning this subject, it becomes clear that this person has only lived in this community. They were born and raised there, and that this community is a highly evolved, highly spiritual sect of people during this time period, and that their primary goal was to preserve ancient wisdom and spiritual philosophy. And Shudi shares that the community is known as a center for knowledge, that they teach ancient knowledge specifically from a previous civilization and time on Earth. And one thing that I found incredibly fascinating is that at one point, Dolores finds Shudi in an observatory and discovers that the Essenes at Qumran had a model of our solar system. And this was a mechanically built model that used some sort of centrifugal force, some sort of energetic force to keep it rotating. And it showed the rotation of the spheres or the planets around our sun. And what's even more interesting about the knowledge that they had is that this model of the solar system included a 10th planet, and one with an irregular orbit that pulls gravitationally on the other planets in our solar system. And some might be familiar with the theory of a 10th planet. Like, we've heard about this in other research. We've heard about planet Nibiru or planet X, and that this planet has a really wide elliptical orbit. So whereas the other planets within our solar system rotate in a more, you know, kind of spherical round orbit around our sun, this other planet, which we don't have clear visibility of from our current location, has a really wide elliptical orbit. So for, you know, thousands and thousands of years, it's way, way, way out there beyond our sun. You know, we have no real interaction with it. We can't really see it. But then, because of this, you know, who knows how long the orbit is, some think it might be related to the precession of the equinoxes. Some think it might be like a 10,000 year period orbit. We're not really sure. But when it comes back around, because it's a fairly large planet, it pulls gravitationally on us and wreaks havoc in our solar system from time to time. This is the theory. And there's some conflicting evidence on this, but there's some good evidence for it. And it appears as though the Essenes are corroborating this. And that they understood that there were periods of time in our past when civilizations were destroyed, when the planet was upturned, overturned, that sort of thing. So we're already, you know, in the beginning parts of this book, finding that this group has preserved information that is particularly important. And what's also interesting about the knowledge that the Essenes held is that they understood the Great Pyramid was an energy generator of sorts. And they also talked about it being built using sound and levitation techniques. And they even note that there's important information contained within the Great Sphinx ready to be revealed at the right time. So they recognized that the structures in ancient Egypt were essentially storehouses of knowledge and wisdom related to the structure of our universe. And I should also note here that this is corroborated in some of Sarah Breskman Cosme's past life regression cases in more recent times. And you can even find a couple of episodes with her about her work on the podcast. We'll link to them in the show notes so you can check those out if you haven't yet. But this is what I find so fascinating about this research is our ability to connect the dots between what would be mainstream academic research, previous past life regression cases from, you know, decades ago, to recent past life regression cases, to more modern esoteric research. And it's all starting to tell a story about our lost history and just confirm what we are theorizing. And Shudi also talks about, you know, some of the differences between this community and the outside world. And you know, keep in mind, this is during that time period of, you know, patriarchal rise, you know, the Roman Empire is wreaking havoc, you know, across areas of Europe and the Middle East. And so the ability to keep a community safe and focused on this sort of work was rare and difficult. And so Shudi talks about how in this community in particular, women were considered equal and they held leadership roles and teacher roles. And there were a lot of teachers in this community because the goal was to continue to pass down to each generation the wisdom that they held and they contained. And because of how particularly dangerous that was at this time, and because of how different their community was, you know, one, it was located on a cliffside area. Some people may be familiar with the area of Qumran and some of the research that's happening around that. Shudi confirms that, and Shudi talks about how this area was energetically protected. So when we think of the mysteries of the universe and our ability to understand the inner workings of the universe, the mechanics of existence, the way in which energy operates, it makes sense that they would have the knowledge to perform magical types of acts to energetically protect an area. We also have that corroborated in some of the information related to giants in North America. There are cases of people visiting mound sites. We won't get into all of the details here. You can check out that episode too. But at some of these mound sites, there are cases of people experiencing some really, really wild and in some cases kind of negative supernatural phenomena. And these were in moments when people were maybe not visiting these sites in a sacred way, when there was, you know, attempts at digging up graves and that sort of thing. So we find this corroborated as well in some of those cases. So it makes sense that we would have communities that were able to do that. And now Shudi also talks about Yahweh, because Dolores becomes fascinated, right, by the fact that they have access to all of this information and wisdom. And she's curious, you know, what sort of wisdom do they have at that time that, you know, maybe is in conflict with some of the more modern teachings of Christianity, or what wisdom do they have that just hasn't been talked about? So Shudi starts talking about Yahweh at one point, and Dolores starts questioning Shudi on the origins of our world and the Garden of Eden and that sort of stuff. And Shudi talks about Yahweh as one of the Elohim. So check, that's in the Bible. but he talks about Yahweh not being over them, that each Elohim had their own area of responsibility, but worked collectively. And Shudi talks about how their area of responsibility is our solar system. They have an interest in our entire solar system, not just our planet. And this information that Shudi starts talking about related to Yahweh directly corroborates the information in Paul Wallace's books about the Elohim. We've done some episodes with Paul Wallace about Paul Wallace as well. Check those out. We'll put those in the show notes. Paul Wallace talks about the fact that in his findings and, you know, looking at some different translations of the word Elohim, we can start to better understand that maybe the Elohim weren't actually angels, and maybe Yahweh isn't actually God, but Yahweh, the Yahweh of our Bible, is actually an angry ET character, not some vengeful God, and that we've actually confused the two, because the Bible is a conglomeration, a mishmash of a lot of different stories that incorporate spiritual wisdom, the history of our civilization, and in that mishmash of information and in the origin stories that were documented there and delivered to us, we've gotten confused, and we've also, you know, had the information that is in the modern Bible translated so many different times in different ways that, you know, we can't take it all at face value. So we start to hear in this past life regression case that, you know, Shudi has some questions about Yahweh, and Shudi even says, this doesn't sound like the God I know, because in this community, they've been taught how to directly commune with God, with our source, how to understand themselves as God, and how to activate that connection. So, you know, when you've started down that path, it becomes very clear that, you know, the God of our universe is not some vengeful, wrathful God, and that there's maybe a completely different way of looking at this. Shudi also talks about the fascinating story of Ezekiel, and there's a lot of information about this out there now, and many people's questions about what was going on with Ezekiel going up in a fiery chariot. And Shudi talks about that too, that Ezekiel's followers said that he was taken in a fiery chariot, and Shudi says, quote, it was said he was visited by others. Others being, quote, others who are similar to us, but not the same, not of earth, from somewhere else. And Shudi says that it's noted in their community and their knowledge that it's fairly well known that some people throughout history have been taken by, quote unquote, the others, and some have been visited, but they're unsure why. I'm getting major chills right now. So here we have more evidence of this fiery chariot incident in our distant past being some sort of contact with extraterrestrial beings, others who have made it to Earth. Shudi also talks about the flying machines of old. This is fascinating because within their documents in this community, they had written blueprints for these flying machines. And Dolores Cannon even questions Shudi, well, could you build them? Would you be able to reproduce them? And Shudi says, well, probably if we needed to, but that's not our main priority, so we haven't focused on that. And he talks about how the Babylonians had the knowledge of the flying machines in the early days, and that they were given to them by the Kalu. We're going to get to Jesus here in a little bit, but this is all important context, I think, just to help, you know, validate some of what comes through about Jesus. So the Kalu are descendants of a previous civilization. And Shudi talks about how it was well known that the Kalu wandered the earth and were able to impart knowledge and wisdom to the people that they visited. And they did this because the earth was uplifted and changed, and there was this major upheaval and cataclysm that happened at one point in our history. And I think it's interesting to note here as well that many cultures around the world talk about culture bringers, and that they encountered visitors from outside of their community coming and imparting knowledge and wisdom, and helping them advance their civilization, helping them develop, you know, the trappings of, you know, modern civilization and culture. So the Kalu are mentioned multiple times in this book as a source of knowledge, as ancestors, as people that the Essenes have gotten knowledge from. And Shudi also talks about some of the times before them when humans were given really powerful knowledge about the universe. And Shudi talks about this in relation to the Ark of the Covenant, and the Ark of the Covenant being some sort of object that contained power, and that this was taken into hiding after men started wanting to use the universal power contained within this object to do things that were not in alignment with positive intentions, that they were trying to bend this power to their will without the right intentions. And I find this interesting as well, because, you know, in some of what I've been getting into, you know, lately, you know, I am finding the understanding that, yeah, we can unlock major power as humans. We can unlock some incredible power within us and affect the world outside of us. And when that power is used in ways that are not for the good of all, oh my goodness, the consequences we face, and we're facing some of those here on earth now. And I think, you know, what Shudi's talking about here is this, you know, attempt to hold back, you know, some wisdom, some information, some actual power objects that could be used not for good. So we'll now get into what Shudi knows about Jesus and Jesus's connection with the Essenes. And at one point, you know, it becomes clear that the Essenes have this really advanced astronomy knowledge. They have these observatories, they have ancient information they're using to further their research of astronomy. And at one point, Shudi starts talking about a special alignment, a special star astrological alignment during his time. And Dolores starts wondering, is this the Star of Bethlehem? Is this the star that the wise men saw, that, you know, was documented in the Bible? And Shudi says, yes, he's aware of the birth of the Messiah, because there was a prophecy that the Essenes held that identified a certain star or astrological alignment at that time. And because they studied this in depth, they knew, I'm getting major chills again. I don't know why I'm surprised by this at this point. I think it's fun to share that because I think it's just like this extra piece of validation when that happens. So anyway, getting major chills on that one. And Shudi talks about how they know where he is because of what they see in the sky. And Dolores, of course, is like getting into researcher mode and is like, give me all the information about Jesus. And what's fascinating here, though, is that she continues questioning Shudi about the birth of the Messiah and what do you know? And even under hypnosis, I think this is a testament to how real it is. When someone is in that regressed state, it's like you pop into another version of yourself. I've experienced that where all of a sudden, you are delivering information from the standpoint of that consciousness, not the consciousness you have now necessarily. And this turns out to be the case because under hypnosis, Shudi would not speak the Messiah's name. And Shudi talks about how he knows that because of this prophecy, because of the location of birth, because of the times, they know he's already in danger. So they were, very protective of this young man. And they also knew, I'm getting emotional here because it's just like such powerful information, you know? I've had this happen multiple times as I've been on this journey of reconnecting with these spiritual technologies and this information. It's clearly important to my soul to be recovering this information and to be engaging with it at this time. And I can share, when I first discovered some of the quote unquote real information about the time of the crucifixion and resurrection. Some of the emotional releases I had were so confirming for that being true. So, if you want to learn more about that, get this book, but then also look into Sri Kaleshwar's teachings. So, the Essenes are, very protective because they recognize what's going on here. They know the significance, they know what's going to happen. They know that this young man would come to live with them eventually. So, Dolores is hot on the case trying to, get information. And Dolores knows, Shudi's talking about Jesus here, but Shudi won't say the name. And Dolores is like, okay, I want to find a way to get this, to get the real identity, to get Shudi to disclose the identity, for confirmation. So even though Shudi would not give Jesus's real name, Shudi did refer to him as Ben Joseph, and how Ben Joseph and his friend would come, or cousin would come live with them for a period of time. So Shudi didn't think this would disclose his true identity because, one, from the standpoint of his consciousness, he didn't know that Dolores already knew about Jesus, right? And Dolores had a really good way of kind of working around, some of these questions to help him, be comfortable talking about these things. So he didn't think that Dolores would already know that the father of Jesus was Joseph. And back then, the term Ben was used in front of the name of the father to describe the person. So Ben Joseph essentially means son of Joseph. So as soon as Shudi said that and Dolores did some quick research, she was like, aha, here we go. We have some corroboration about Jesus. And Shudi shares that as young boys, again, because it was known by their parents, what level of soul they were, what sort of knowledge and wisdom they needed to be able to fulfill their destinies, they were taken to the Essenes community to further their studies and be educated on the mysteries of the universe. And one particular passage I love is where Shudi talks about the differences in personalities that John, so John, you know, is taken there with Jesus, and John, you know, is the more lively and fiery and strong-willed one. He was really jovial and exuberant, and that Jesus was a little more reserved, a little more stoic, but really joyful as a child and clearly highly intelligent. And Shudi describes Jesus as, you know, being aware of his destiny to some degree at a really young age, and aware of the knowledge that he's needing to acquire in his lifetime. So Shudi confirms that even though Jesus was born as a wise soul, as a wise young person, he still had work to do in his lifetime to recover memories and wisdom and activate his supernatural abilities, which is one reason his parents took him to live with the Essenes for a period of time. And then at one point he left there and went to travel India and other parts of Asia to learn from spiritual masters. And in the book, you know, there's some passages confirming, you know, Jesus's understanding that he, even though he gained a lot of information from the Essenes about the mysteries, there were missing pieces. There were missing pieces of the puzzle that he needed to find. So he went to India. Shudi also describes the physical appearance of Jesus, and it's similar to a lot of the appearances we've heard about, I guess. But Dolores also talks about a book that was written in 1887 by two men who found reports that were sent to the Vatican during the time of Jesus that directly confirm the exact description that Shudi gives. So again, we have just, you know, some evidence stacking related to Jesus here. And we also hear about the miracles that Jesus was said to have performed. And Shudi, as an initiate of the mysteries, even though he wasn't like the highest level scholar in the community, he actually taught Jesus and John for a period of time. And he was able to confirm that anyone has the ability to perform similar miracles, and that Jesus simply had great ability at a young age. He learned and knew the laws of nature and the universe and had opened himself up to powerful energy channels. And he was able to confirm that Jesus, you know, healed the deaf, healed the blind, and in some cases brought souls back into their body and reanimated the body after death, which we have modern evidence of with Sri Kaleshwar's ability, you know, to do the same. So, you know, throughout these sessions, and I should say all of this material, you know, was pulled together over the course of a lot of different sessions. And again, the subject throughout this work was, you know, interested and you know, excited to explore it with Dolores, but then after the fact, kind of, you know, just put it to the side. You know, it's not something that they wanted to delve into. And so we also later in the book start to access some information about the death of the Messiah, of Jesus. And at one point, you know, Dolores is wondering, you know, okay, I'm getting all of this information from Shudi about time he had directly with Jesus when Jesus was a young boy, but then Jesus left the Essenes community and didn't return, it sounded like. But would Shudi have any information about the death? And so Dolores starts, you know, working her magic and finding a way to go forward in time to see if Shudi has any sort of information surrounding those events. And Shudi did. And so, you know, he starts describing some of the events that led to Jesus's death, and you know, the Romans and those in power who, you know, even in the Jewish church, who did not like what Jesus was sharing, you know, and I think, you know, we're threatened by his power, right? And that, you know, Jesus had awareness of this and was aware that there would be some turn of events that would lead to his death, and that he was preparing for that. And one thing I find particularly fascinating about these passages is, again, how they directly confirm some of Sri Kaleshwar's memories. So Shudi says that, you know, while the immediate events leading up to the actual crucifixion resulted in a lot of pain, Jesus was able to control that through the use of his mind and energetic manipulation techniques. This was also corroborated in Dolores's book, They Walked with Jesus, where there are references about the crucifixion and it appearing as though Jesus wasn't in pain. And a particularly wise follower in that case study made the note that it seemed as though he might have just left his body and had, you know, an out-of-body experience. And, you know, Saint Sri Kaleshwar shares about this, that, you know, even though the events surrounding Jesus's death were horrific, because of Jesus's ability to engage these advanced yogic techniques, he was able to move through the process without being fully in the body to experience that pain. And ultimately, that's why he still radiated the light and the love that so many people have described related to that event. So, yeah, this was particularly powerful to read, you know, in India. You know, as I've made my way through this research and am, you know, finding this directly corroborated, you know, what I've gone to India for, the information I've integrated and learned about this time period is directly corroborated in another book. While I'm there in India, while I'm intending to be going deeper in these advanced yogic processes. So clearly, you know, the reading of this book at this time was not a coincidence. I think we all agree here. There are no coincidences now. But more and more, as my energy field shifts and changes, I'm experiencing the truth of that in these really profound ways. So, you know, this book not only corroborates other really important information that is coming out, has come out about Jesus's life and teachings and the technologies he engaged, you know, this book also helps us better understand the Essenes and their practices, their connection to the divine, their role in helping to bring up Jesus and get him, you know, on the right track in life. So, you know, if this is the sort of topic you are interested in, read this book. If you are, you know, going down the path of connecting with Sri Kaleshwar's work, read this book. It is profound in so many ways. And, you know, I think sometimes the most interesting parts are those more mundane aspects of life during these historic time periods surrounding these, you know, really important events that, you know, we've talked about, because so much is lost in written history, right? Books get lost, books have gotten burned. There's so much information that once was documented that we just don't have access to now. And we're finding through the ways in which we can explore our own consciousness that these hidden truths and mysteries about life thousands of years ago are not lost, that we we can regain access to that information and start to develop a different perspective on history, on what's possible, on, you know, what we should be focused on here in modern times to make this world better. So I wanted to share this today because, you know, this aspect of my spiritual journey, now, you know, reconnecting with the exact practices that were used by Jesus, you know, how, you know, profound this has been, and some of these connections that have been forming. And I want to share them with you to help you see those connections, to help you, you know, understand more about, you know, what I've been exploring, why I've been exploring it. And, you know, we'll talk more, I'm sure, at some point about the practices themselves. We'll talk about that on the podcast, Supernatural Souls. But, you know, I love geeking out on this sort of research and these sorts of book reviews. And we hadn't done one in a while. So this felt right. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about Jesus lately. So I wanted to keep the Jesus train going. And for the record, you know, if I ever make little jokes or that sort of thing about anything spiritual or sacred, you know that it's partially just for the purpose of not taking ourselves so seriously, right? We do a lot of that. And while, you know, I am absolutely engaging this information, these practices, this wisdom with the utmost reverence for our universe, for our source, for ourselves, you know, we got to laugh every once in a while. And like the fact that so much of this information just got lost and had to go into hiding for so long, like, oh my goodness, Earth, what a situation we're in here. So I'm excited about the fact that we can tap into this information again, like, oh my God, we have access to the exact technologies that Jesus used. Like, we can do that. Like, we can use those. So anyway, I'll stop. Thank you for joining today. It was so good to be back with you. And I'm recalibrating after this recent journey, this recent powerful journey to India. And I'm excited for more conversations to come. So keep tuning in, subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes or content. We're putting out other videos too, to support you in just connecting with wisdom that we think is important at Star Family Wisdom. So thank you again. And if you are into all things, you know, spiritual, cosmic, which you should be if you've hung in this long, check out our new merch that we just launched. It's starfamilywisdommerch.com. We have so many cool new merchandise products that are reflective of our vibe, our interests, sacred geometry, UFOs, all things astrology and cosmic. Check it out, and you can sport some high vibe merch in your life as you go out in the world. Okay, I'll see you next time on the next episode. Bye for now.